I think the biggest challenge they're facing, in particular in the senior living industry and as it bleeds into other service industries like healthcare, like hospitality, you know, much more than just it's a building where people live, is thinking about how do we make that transition. And also one of the big questions is, where do we invest?
Welcome to season 8 of Bridge the Gap, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. The BTG Network is powered by sponsors Align, NICMAP, ProCare HR, Sage, Hamilton Captel, ServiceMaster, The Bridge Group Construction, and Solinity, and produced by Solinity Marketing.
Bridge the Gap in 3, 2. Welcome to Bridge the Gap Podcast, the senior living podcast with Josh and Lucas. Another awesome interview, another awesome conversation here in Austin, Texas, one of my favorite cities. We already had our tacos, we had our brisket, and now we're having great conversations. I want to welcome Kelly Arduino and Brandon Christofferson of Whipfly. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. We're happy to be here.
Did I nail that or what?
You did.
I totally nailed that.
Bravo. Bravo.
Listen, obviously, We're having fun here. This has been an incredible day. Earlier, we were talking about just like momentum, energy, and it seems like you are both on the forefront of seeing how that actually plays out in the M&A market, the advisory world. And it is a special day and a special conversation to be able to pick your brains because you guys get to pull back the kimono and really see what's going on. And so I would love, just starting out here, can we get some background, Kelly, on Whipfly?
Sure.
What are you guys involved in?
Well, I think that's why we can see, you know, in the kimono, is that Whipfly is an accounting and consulting firm. As I had mentioned before, it started in Wisconsin in 1930, but we've had many and multiple acquisitions over the years across the states, and now we're a national firm. But we started out with this notion, what we call the Whipfly way, is being more than just doing your accounting or taxes, really truly understanding the business. And we developed consulting services as a function of what the business needs were. So over time, we have this very diverse array of services that extend well beyond accounting, well beyond tax, into technology, and then of course the specialty consulting that is very specific to whatever, not just industry, but even sub-industries. And we can talk about that in the senior living space too.
Yeah, I mean, so an array of lenses to look through. Brandon, how did you get started at Whipfly? What has really pointed you in this direction?
Yeah, my role has really evolved over the 8 years that I've been here at Whipfly. Started back at a small firm that merged in to Whipfly. Like Kelly had said, that's how the firm has grown. Found myself now in a role where I'm doing really healthcare financial due diligence and transaction advisory work across a variety of different healthcare verticals.
Kelly, currently, what's one of the biggest challenges your customers are facing right now?
I think the biggest challenge they're facing, in particular in the senior living industry and as it bleeds into other service industries like healthcare, like hospitality, you know, much more than just it's a building where people live, is thinking about how do we make that transition. And also one of the big questions is, where do we invest? It's easy to think, hey, we need some new paint on the walls and we need to update the kitchen, but the new world is really filled with different kinds of business models that have complex services for seniors in different kinds of care settings. And I think that's what the contemplation is right now. That's what the buzz is that the old way of doing business is not going to be the new way. We have new expectations from the group coming up. And how does my business model morph to be able to meet those demands?
Well, so Kelly, I've got a lot of things that I would love to ask both of you about, and we'll have time maybe to touch on a few of those. But we're obviously here at NIC, Capital Markets meets the developer owner operators, seems very positive. Spring was positive, fall's even more positive, but curious to see how you're seeing market conditions impact decisions. So everything from people are talking about the tariffs, is that impacting? How is it impacting interest rates? What's changing? What's not changing? Do you have any read on that? What are you seeing in real time?
So I think when the tariffs came out, people were very concerned that that was going to be dead stop for a lot of new construction or even remodeling and acquisition. But it really has not. I call them people as organizations, have been very resilient in finding ways to absorb those costs and kind of keep moving ahead, because the demand for senior living of many kinds is just not stopping. And so we're not in a situation where the tariffs are stopping us. And then you think, well, what about the higher interest rates? There's optimism, certainly, that interest rates are going to decline. But even then, what we've seen is, and the financiers are, they abhor a vacuum, right? They don't like times and not to do deals. So they're coming up and being creative about how to do financing, even with the higher interest rates, and that started to kick in. But also, it's become normal. And the interest rates we're seeing right now are normal in the grand scheme of interest rates. So I think it's a combination of the acceptance of a state that we hadn't seen before, because we were really in abnormal conditions for financing, and also the just unbelievable demand that exists.
So Brandon, I believe you're on the M&A side of the business pretty heavily, right?
Yes. So
how is everything in the market conditions? What are you seeing happening in the market right now? And over the next, maybe between now and the next, Nick, what do you see happening?
I mean, I think there's obviously going to be a higher demand for high quality assets. I think for the most part, really, like, the supply hasn't been able to catch up to meet that. And there is a lot of opportunity to either, one, build new. I think the One Big Beautiful Bill Act has a really, I mean, it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's really an extender's bill more than anything else. And the permanent implementation of the 100% bonus depreciation will really incentivize capital expenditures. And then on the more of the acquisition side, I think that's going to continue to take off with the opportunity to develop some of these underperforming assets and reinvest in better facilities and meeting really what the expectations are for seniors as the boomers age.
Well, it seems to me too, and maybe Lucas, this is something you could chime in on for the reconstruction and renovation business, but it seems like a lot of operators are investing and putting a lot of CapEx into their existing communities. What are you seeing from your partners and providers in the space?
Providers in the space, I think, are looking, like I said, for just opportunities to become more efficient. Cut costs is a big one. I think the biggest piece of this, I think, is people. And a lot of times, I think that gets overlooked in senior living when we look at the difference from a senior living transaction in comparison to your typical business. The senior living is very real estate driven. Operations, I think, sometimes gets overlooked, and that's where we come in and kind of do the financial due diligence and understand these different financial ratios and whatnot that help really determine whether something has room for improvement or they're operating effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. Lucas, you see a ton of this with the what's going on in the markets and the renovations and capital expenditures. A lot of people feeling very favorable with occupancies going up.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm leaning in because, so I have a construction company. We renovate senior housing. You're the developer operator. You're leaning into this. Like, it's really interesting to be able to talk to people that have this kind of outsider perspective, that you're looking at this macro and micro and consulting with people. I mean, Kelly, I know that you don't have a crystal ball, but could you take us through, the end of, through Q4 of this year, and then, kind of starting into next year? Can you give us a little bit of the tea leaves? Can you help us out?
Well, I'm never shy, at least trying.
Right.
At the worst, it's a laugh about me, but I see that, and we hear a lot of activity. because we were in this time frame where there was a lot of distress because of the occupancy, right? And what happened during that distress? People didn't invest anything. They let things go. And so now it is a lot of diligence around, you know, how much does this facility need in terms of renovation? Is that the issue for their occupancy, or is there something else going on? So I think there's a lot of looks. I mean, folks that I've been talking to here at the conference have said, you know, we've passed on a lot of stuff, but we are looking. There's a lot of things coming on the market. I mean, the other side of this equation that sometimes gets forgotten is that some of the, especially when you look at single sites, those might be family held or single operators, and those folks are aging out, and maybe their kids don't really want to take it on, and so they're interested in selling too. So the demographics of the owners in this space are also aging and fueling the demand. So what's going to happen this year? I think we're going to see a lot of due diligence. I think toward the end of Q4, you're going to start to see those transactions close because it's going to take some time. We can talk a little more about the level of due diligence that needs to be done, because I think it's different than it was. And then, you know, starting into next year, that rhythm of kind of the acquisition plus how do we start to really capitalize on the economies of scale that we've created now that we have these bigger entities. And these entities may be not just independent living or not just assisted or memory care. You know, I think we're running into this age where it's going to be a mix of things. The new investors are thinking, at some point when my independent living resident gets old, I don't want him to move out. I want him to move to my next thing. And it's not a CCRC per se. It's more of a, I'll call it a loose network model, business model that I see changing.
Well, I'm interested in the diligence part of it. But before you dive into that, is deal flow going to hit a record or be on track or on pace to be as high this year it has on previous high years?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think we may see all-time highs toward the end of the year.
Interesting.
Well, and Lucas, you read my mind. So you said something just a few minutes ago, Kelly, on the due diligence. And so whether you're looking to build, buy, or expand, you said maybe the diligence that once worked maybe needs to be a little bit different. There's obviously been a lot of people, not necessarily sitting on the sidelines, but maybe licking wounds. and now with occupancies up, so much positivity in the market, people are like, hey, let's get back to work. Let's grow. Let's do some things. How does that need to be a little different nowadays?
I think it's much more thorough now. And like I'd alluded to a few times already, it's much more driven, I think, by the operations and what the actual results are from the operations rather than more of like a real estate value. So when we look at this, when we do what we would call a quality of earnings, we'll look at the company's historical financial statements on a monthly basis, look for any trends in their revenue and earnings streams, normalize for anything that would be either non-recurring, non-operating, try to come up with that future financial picture. What would a buyer really realize as a new owner of the facility that's being sold? And that's really, I think, the key driver of value. Revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash is king is something that we say on that.
That's quotable. That is quotable. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I love that. So from the operators, sort of what an operator looks like nowadays versus then, do you see some key differences in how operators are setting up their shops and the skill sets that they have on compared to several years ago?
I think the focus is one on technology. How can we cut costs? I think with the push towards value-based care, that's obviously a key driver. How can we cut costs? How can we make operations more efficient? And investing in what that future looks like.
Well, there has been a ton of discussion about data, technology, AI that's giving information to operators that maybe we didn't have, or we had many of the data, but we didn't really know what to do with it several years ago. So that's been a a big change. So for you all, you know, we are still not seeing the development, the new development of what we were prior to several years ago. It's been big M&A. Do you see anything going on with the market trends and conditions that maybe going into first quarter of next year that we're going to see an increase in new developments, or do you still think it's going to be the M&A is going to rule over the next year?
I mean, I think it's access to capital and timeline drives that. I think the acquisition process is much quicker. So if you're looking for speed, if you're looking to break into a new market, provide different services, I think the acquisition route would be the way to go. New builds, though, I think without having to run into any issues on the acquisition side, if you have issues with the actual asset, I think that's like as far as having to reinvest capital into improvements, I think that's where you can come in and find maybe some hidden costly issues.
Yeah.
And that's, something I think that you would want to consider,
yeah,
whether it was building new or acquiring.
Well, and you all touched on a point, too, of there's a lot of, I think, the legacy buildings where a lot of great operators that we all know have weathered a lot of storms. They've been there through 2008. They've been there through the early 2020s, and they've gotten their occupancies back up because they've stayed true to who they are. They have sort of had to reinvent themselves, but now they're faced with how do we change this into a product that's relevant for the next generation of senior housing? And they're a little bit tired, maybe won't be able to realize the investment of time and capital that they would have to put in to do that. So I think that's also creating this perfect storm of opportunity for a lot of the newcomers that see a faster way to the market and grabbing some market share and some growth markets. Wouldn't you say, Lucas?
I would. So final question as we round out our conversation. This comes off the back of a previous conversation we've had with Nick Mapp. You know, obviously the data there is really important to the industry. Is this idea of expansions on existing communities. So we're going to add 24-bed memory care. We're going to add a wing here for IL. We're going to add, you know, you mentioned that continuum of care. Maybe it's not a CCRC, but hey, we want to keep people here. And maybe those are done through partnerships or maybe adding onto our existing campus, right? Thoughts on that?
I think that that's where we're going to see more and more, you know, in terms of new development around that. Maybe those will be more planful because it's easier than retrofitting something like that. Many sites don't lend themselves to expansion or to the kind of room you need for some of those higher acuity types of services. So if I had to, you know, crystal ball it, I'd say development is going to be more of that continuum. Acquisition will be more economies of scale at this juncture until we figure out the next piece, which is how do you embed technology into the management of your residents wherever they're at in their care needs. And care is more than just healthcare. Like I said, it's groceries, pet sitting, you know, beauty salon, et cetera, et cetera. I see that there's a lot of room to develop some very interesting and robust models in this next phase.
I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, awesome opportunity to sit down with some experts here that are advising our industry, helping operators make wise decisions with the complexity, the changing environment that we're in senior housing. But what an exciting time to be right here, Lucas.
That's right. Momentum and excitement. Thank you both for your time
it's
today.
It's been a pleasure.
Coming on Bridge the Gap, the Senior Living Podcast. And for our listeners that want to learn more, scroll down into those show notes right there. Hit the links to WhipFleet and learn some more on your own. You can go to btgvoice.com, download this content and so much more. Thanks for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas. Connect with the BTG Network team and use your voice to influence the industry by connecting with us at btgvoice.com.